I'm Tara Cleary. Welcome to Stimulus. Have you ever wondered about your ancestry? What strands of history make you? I've been itching for a long time to have my DNA tested. Like many others, I find it fascinating. Plus, it's easy if you can afford it. Pay about $100, spit into a bottle, pop it into an envelope, and send it off.
Well, there's so many mysteries about life and my family. I'm not white, right? That's important to know.
Duarte Geraldino is a journalist.
Because I'm not white, there's a history of people in my family being separated from each other. And you didn't know where your roots were except the mythical Africa, which is nice and wonderful, but these companies offered the promise of letting us know not only which countries in Africa you're from, but also tracing the path of your ancestors once they got to the USA.
Duarte used two companies, Ancestry.com and 23andMe, to find out who he really is. Both delivered the same results.
I'm Afro-Latino, I come from a long line of people who look like me. But according to the tests, they are from the Mediterranean, sort of Britain, that area, Greek, Italian. My last name is Italian, right? Well, the crazy thing that I found out, as black as I am, and I say that because this is how I present, this is how the world sees me, I'm half white. I'm like, oh my God, what happened?
Half white, you never know what you discover with these tests. And that knowledge can have a huge impact.
Like, I used to look at those people who say, oh, I'm biracial, I don't know. The tragic mulatto. I'm like, you guys, I don't know what you're doing. Like, why is this so difficult? Not to demean anyone's experience, it just hasn't been mine. And it was so foreign to me, and I didn't understand it. It turns out that, you know, we were in the same boat.
Research using DNA has exploded since the human genome was sequenced in 2003.
The Human Genome Project, plus the amazing power of computing and artificial intelligence, has led us to where we are now, which is being able to sequence genomes extremely quickly, extremely cheaply, and then to do this on an extremely large scale.
Carolyn Newhouse is a research scholar at the Hastings Center, which deals with ethics issues in biological sciences.
I'm kind of interested in the broader picture. From a research perspective, what can we really learn from big data? And how should we design the infrastructure for that process in a way that both respects individuals, but also ultimately produces knowledge?
And that question has raised concerns about individuals' privacy, a question that Joel Michael Reynolds, the postdoctoral fellow at the Hastings Center, is examining.
What do we do with this now massive amount of information at our fingertips that we still are at a very early stage of fully understanding the meaning of it in terms of health outcomes, in terms of the psychosocial impacts of this knowledge? You know, if you look at the terms of service for 23andMe, there is this line about, I think the language they use is, this knowledge is irrevocable. It really took me aback to read that. And I think that we need to reflect a lot more carefully and a lot more substantively on what this knowledge means for human life and all the many ethical questions it raises.
And in case it wasn't obvious, Joel had his DNA tested by 23andMe. But once you've mailed in your saliva and get your test results back, what happens to that DNA? Ancestry.com has partnered with research company Calico, a Google affiliate, and 23andMe has aligned with two big pharma firms, Genentech, part of Roche, and Pfizer. They're matches made in research and business heaven. 23andMe and Ancestry have all this DNA lying around. Just over 1 million for 23andMe and 4 million for Ancestry. So they provide Big Pharma with DNA at a cost, and these companies produce drugs that they sell for enormous profits. I asked both heritage companies about this. 23andMe refused to answer my questions, but Ancestry was very clear. No one is forced to consent to their DNA being shared for research. But shockingly, most people do agree. Duarte says that at the end of the day, the very nature of DNA kind of negates our anonymity.
To tell you the truth, I feel as if I can't quite be stingy with my genetic information. So with these companies, they have all these records that you help them pinpoint, all your relatives. So I feel like if one person starts speaking, you've already spilled the beans for all of us. Remember that question I was telling you that they made me answer, yes or no, do I understand that knowledge is irreversible? With that in mind, I want to stress the point that as soon as anyone within your ancestry circle starts giving DNA, it sort of bleeds into everybody, right? Like the cat's out of the bag now.
This is true. Plus, I need to point out that these companies say that personal identifying data like your name, address, etc. is never shared. And the USA has an act called GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Disclosure Act, which
prohibits discrimination on the basis of genetic information with respect to health insurance and employment.
So say if pre-existing conditions are found from DNA. But that still doesn't guarantee your information is secure. GINA,
interestingly, does not apply to life insurance companies.
It does concern me. These companies discriminate against folks for a whole lot of reasons. So this is one of the reasons why before I took those tests and before I did a lot of things in my life, I, you know, got enough insurance, got all these things ahead of time.
GINA also doesn't protect against data breaches or if law enforcement demands client DNA information.
It is worrisome for a number of reasons. Since the founding of 23andMe in 2006, they self-report that they've only received requests from law enforcement for information regarding 5 out of more than 1.2 million customers. Now, for a very complex set of reasons, they were able to resist these requests. I really think it can't be emphasized enough that people need to reflect upon the gravity of this information, and there needs to be a concerted effort to continue to protect it with laws like GINA.
What I find remarkable is that you are paying a company for an ancestry test, and then you allow that company to sell your DNA, making even more profit off you. Surely you should be compensated for your DNA.
We, from the school of thought, that people should get involved and get a cut.
Olivier Noel is the founder and CEO of DNA Simple, one of a handful of companies that pays donors for their genetic information.
I mean, our model is clearly different. I mean, we get a lot of feedback from people and say, hey, you know, since you have our sample, why don't you give us some data back? But even if we're to get to a point where we get samples to provide some type of service.
He means ancestry research services.
We will still make sure that if you provide a sample that you should get some money every time.
Olivier came up with the idea of DNA Simple when, as a PhD student, he struggled to find DNA samples for a study he was doing in small-town Pennsylvania.
So that's where I had the idea to create a platform in a way where you are no longer limited by geographic barriers.
With DNA Simple, everyone can help science and medicine by becoming a saliva donor. On top of that, you get paid for every time you provide a sample.
That's what DNA Simple does. We essentially match researchers looking for specific specimens and samples to sample donors that are located anywhere, and so they could easily participate from their home. And so the incentive for researchers is that, wow, now you can get your samples virtually on demand.
And the incentive for donors?
You literally get a little tube where you virtually just put a little bit of sample in there and then drop it in the mail, send back to us, and you get compensated $50 every time you provide your samples.
Now, why can't these ancestry companies do that? The other thing that disturbs me about these firms selling off my DNA is I can't ensure that these for-profit companies are doing beneficial research. Genentech and Pfizer are using client DNA to research Parkinson's and Crohn's diseases, respectively. But Calico is researching aging.
The concern that you're raising, which is sort of, should we be using this data to learn things about aging and ultimately produce expensive therapeutics that will be marketed to prevent aging, or should we be using this data to learn about cancer? I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive. Actually, the very same data set could be used to learn things about cancer and about aging. But the question about who decides whether we learn about cancer or aging is a really big one.
I guess we can potentially use the same data sets to research different things. But are these labs actually sharing data? I find it unlikely. After all, there are for-profit businesses.
I think it's important to constantly remind oneself that one's data is a product that can be sold and is sold on various marketplaces. What worries me more than the many ethical questions relating private sector companies like 23andMe or analogous governmental programs, what worries me more are the data mining and predictive analytics companies. These companies that once they have the data, they are then able to wield it to spectacular effect to get certain political outcomes or whatnot.
And that's not the only big data out there. We willingly disclose our information, turning on location services on our smartphones, sharing our personal data on Facebook. We tracked every time we search a website or shop online. And you can't take back that knowledge, including your DNA ancestry data.
All those genetic tests don't prepare you for the social implications of this knowledge that is irreversible. These tests have the potential to disrupt a whole lot of your social relationships, because suddenly you think, oh my God, the breadth of my genetic family is quite large. Who do you date? If everyone could be a cousin. How far away? 10th cousin, 12th cousin?
What kind of society do we want? Are these trade-offs worth it? And to what extent have we been lulled into this normalization of being biometric, bio-identified subjects that can be culled for data?
I also feel now that knowing this knowledge, it makes, to be frank, it sort of weakens the value I place on genetic relationship. Because at the end you realize, after I met all my cousins who are amazing, wonderful people and were all reflections of some common ancestor, I like the people I grew up with. I like the cousins I knew as cousins quite a bit. I like, you know, I'm friends with them. There's a reason that fate or whatever forces in the world put you within a circle of people.
Big data, as it's known, is extremely lucrative. It can save and make millions. And there's a lot of it. According to Forbes, more data has been created in the past few years than in the entire previous history of humanity. But we're only analyzing around 0.5% of it. What worries me most is, are we prepared for the social and financial consequences of all this convenient information? Until next time, this is Stimulus. I'm Tara Cleary.